can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer? We know that states with the most gun laws tend to have the fewest gun deaths. So the notion that gun laws don't work or just will make it harder for law-abiding citizens and criminals will still get their guns, it's not borne out by the evidence. Somebody somewhere will comment and say, Obama politicized this issue.
Radio Free Beat.
Repeat, this is a pirate transmission from District 13 with a message.
Radio Free Readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Welcome to the Voice of the American Redoubt. This is the John Jacob Schmidt Show. I am John Jacob Schmidt, and it is good to be with you guys. Haven't talked to you since, well, yesterday. Well, for those of you who were able to tune in, this was a very busy weekend. And so this is going to be an incomplete show. How I had it planned in my mind, in my head. I'll give you the rundown, and there's some things that I definitely want to go over to put some things into proper perspective tonight. But I am going to forego the news and commentary because I just really didn't have time to get everything put together. This is what happened. We had a great show yesterday on KTW, on the American Christian Network. And during that time, there was an event going on, and it's called the Old Paths Christian History Conference. And I was, well, we were going to try to broadcast live from that event. We had to work some issues out, which are worked out now. We can broadcast remotely, but I just did it from Radio Free Readout Studio A. I was supposed to head over there, and I'll tell you what, I tried twice to get over there yesterday, and couldn't make it. I got sidelined, and then it was time to go to the Second Amendment Constitutional Carry Rally over in Coeur d'Alene. So I made the jaunt over there. Just in time. That was a great rally, lots of momentum. It was very encouraging to see so many patriots out and to meet so many of you guys again, to see the familiar faces. There were folks from all over the American Redoubt. Many of you obviously I know and have met, and many who I had the privilege of meeting for the first time. And it was just good. And then today was... I just got derailed. Yesterday, when I was speaking with Barbara from the North Idaho Pocket of Resistance, she's focusing on the refugee resettlement issue, particularly how it could affect us in the American Redoubt and what some of these organizations have their eyes set on. And she spoke to the Kootenai County Assemblies just probably a month and a half ago, and she had a great presentation. So I've been, I talked to her, we lined up the interview, but really only scratched the surface. But something came up yesterday, and I keep getting these little whisperings, these little nuggets of information coming in about this Convoy of Hope. Now, I've not had a chance to personally research this. And I want to, and I'm in the middle of doing that now. But this is what started coming in. This convoy of hope is tied in with the George Soros. And this convoy of hope is coming through the communities, you know, to help the poor, to give out food and clothing. And it's like this traveling red, you know, goodwill, Salvation Army, food truck, poor people, we're here to help, going from community to community. And they get the churches involved and everybody's happy and they're all working together and they feel good about themselves. And then we find out that there's this tie to George Soros. George Soros started this organization. Well, I can find no evidence of that. And I've researched it as much as I have, but what I was going to do is cover the show on that today and a little bit on the Second Amendment issues, the firearms issues, especially with this in the light of the shootings that took place this week. Tragically, over in Oregon, where Christians were singled out and executed by a gunman at the Umpqua Community College. And what's also disturbing is Obama's response and his renewed vigor for going after guns and under what he calls common sense gun measures, regulations, laws, however you want to word it or craft it. And I'm going to talk about that tonight because new information was coming in about this Convoy of Hope, which is affiliated with this Janus group. And there are all these kind of mysterious floating organizations that nobody really knows where they came from. They kind of came out of nowhere, and now they're parading through the communities like rock stars, tossing T-shirts to the crowd. Not really, but they come from outside the community, and they're there to help the poor. What I am discovering is that these varying different groups, one of which is tied to George Soros directly. He funded it, seeded it, founded it. Not the Convoy of Hope, not that I can find anyway. I want to make sure this came up yesterday and it was almost presented as if, you know, this Convoy of Hope is a George Soros organization, which is the way it was presented to me by several folks. And I just, something in my, just in my spirit, I was like, we better know what we're talking about first. Let's do some research. So that's kind of what I've committed myself to. And I want to make sure that this is, so I'm not going to cover that part tonight. I want to make sure that we do this properly. There are some things that warrant our attention. And I believe that there are some things that could be, you know, the proverbial Trojan horse coming in under the guise of helping people, but either the people involved in these organizations are deceptive, or their heart's in the right place, but there are spinsters at the higher levels of these organizations with different plans down the road to be implemented. That's kind of where I am right now. And I want to expose it if there's something real, and if there's not, I want to quash any rumors. So far, this Convoy of Hope seems like a very good thing. Of course, on the other hand, why do we have some humanitarian type of non-government organization on a convoy tour going from community to community when we should be helping our own communities? What are they providing that we can't do or should not, or, you know, what we should be doing already within our own communities? There's just this kind of, I see where people are kind of enamored by this good feeling group coming from outside on a mission to help people, and nobody really knows who they are. I don't really know who they are. But anyway, I'm rambling now, but I wanted to share that with you guys because I am getting emails from listeners saying, hey, this is danger. This is deceptive. And other stuff that I'm seeing on my own research is showing, you know, a very harmless, what's the word? It's helping other people. There's a word for that. But anyway, so that's what we're going to do tonight. Let me talk just real quick before we take a break. We're going to forego the news and commentary. This is going to be kind of just an odd show. It's one of those shows that just kind of, I just wasn't prepared for, quite frankly, because of this research I was trying to do and more information coming in. And I just finally had to reach the point where I said, you know, I'm just going to have to regroup and present this next week. That'll give me the time to do the research that really is, it would give it much more justice to report on something that I can fully research. How's that? Yesterday and today, there's a American Redoubt conference that I couldn't be at, darn it. And they invited me, like, we really want you to be there. And I was going to set up, I was going to broadcast live. I just went through that. But my goodness, I just couldn't get over there. And I was just really bummed out. Pastor Chuck Baldwin was there. He came over from Kalispell. Pastor John Weaver, I've talked about him before. He was at Marble, one of the speakers at Marble. And I love that guy. I just love his, he has a presence about him. You guys that have been in front of him, you know, he's just a solid, hardcore patriot, kind of like right out of the days of the founding fathers, that type of pastor. He's kind of this grandfatherly, got the big white beard, kind of a burly man, and he's just a very pleasant, has that, you know, that always smile. He's from the South. He's got that Southern drawl from Georgia. And I don't know. I just really like the guy a lot, and I've always appreciated his teaching. It's always been so solid, and it's helped me be just further grounded in the beliefs that we have as Christian patriots. When you start to doubt, man, am I off? Am I right on this? Am I correct? Am I off base? I mean, as a Christian, you get these conflicting views from the world. Oh, if you're a real Christian, you wouldn't be this, you wouldn't judge, you wouldn't be talking about being prepared and being a fearmonger. You would love everyone and accept everyone and be a peacemaker. So just go along with whatever the world's trying to sell you, because you're supposed to be about peace and love. And we get hammered with that, don't we? A lot. And you know that's not right, but you don't really know where to go from there. And Pastor John Weaver's just been one of those guys in my life that has really helped me be grounded firmly in our beliefs, my beliefs. Another pastor, Thomas McConnell, he was talking about the church, the agrarian church. He's a pastor and speaker on biblical agrarianism and building Christian community. Pretty fascinating. And I wanted to get in front of him and listen to his stuff. I want to research that, but I'm just only going off of his reputation, and folks have spoken very highly of him. Thomas McConnell. If you guys didn't get a chance to go to that conference, I've spoken with several of you who did go, and all of you guys are just, the reports are that this is definitely something that Christian patriots, you know, don't want to miss out on, and I did. But that's okay. These guys, you can go check their information out. And this was put on by the Lordship Church, which was headed by Pastor Warren Campbell. And he is a recently redoubted, strategically moved from California to North Idaho. And he is a patriot to the core. Great man of God. And I really like him and his son, who is also a pastor. But anyway, you can go and check those guys out. We'll post this on the website in the highlights and resources posting. And also, if you guys didn't know it, we've added an events calendar. We got all the stuff coming up on the radar, and just mentioning it during the podcast or during the radio show isn't quite enough. So what we're going to do is we're going to be adding these events to the events calendar, which is on the website, radiofreeredoubt.com, up in the upper right-hand corner, not all the way in the upper right-hand. It's below the main banner on toward the top of the webpage, right underneath the banner on the right-hand side. And you guys be able, that's where we put, you know, the Second Amendment rally, this Old Paths Christian History Conference, and things like that, to keep you guys informed. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of these gun issues and what Obama has to say about guns. I mean, everybody agrees we just need to do something about these guns. Even gun owners agree that we should be passing gun control laws, right? Well, that's what he says. We'll talk about that and more when I get back. This is the voice of the American Redoubt.
You want to see what 29% unemployment looks like? Well, look no further than the jobs market this week. Yep, that's right. We are at 29% unemployment, but the talking heads in Washington will actually tell you it's 5.1% and falling. The lies keep on coming, and I continue to debunk them and give you the truth about the economy. Hello, everyone. This is Fox 519 here, and I am bringing you the news that matters to your pocketbook as patriots and preppers. This is Eye on the Economy, brought to you by Radio Free Redoubt.
In the days of Noah, Book 3, Perdition, a global empire arises like a phoenix from the ashes of the world that was. The emerging order is unified by a new global currency and a single world religion, which are mandated by an imposed UN treaty. In the interest of unity and peace, a zero-tolerance policy for dissenters is enacted and strictly enforced. Hunted down like common criminals for daring to resist the state, Noah Parker's group will have to rely on faith and wits to endure the powers of darkness, which are quickly consuming the earth. Buy your copy of The Days of Noah, Book 3, Perdition, by best-selling author Mark Goodwin in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition from Amazon.com today.
Well, welcome back, everyone. Can you believe that the people in America still believe the BS about how the unemployment rate is falling? Well, the BLS, or the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, released some staggering numbers about how the number of people who are without work here in America. The BLS reported that a record number, 94,610,000 people, that's age 16 and over, were not in the labor force in September. In other words, they were neither employed nor had made specific efforts to find work in the prior 4 weeks. The number of individuals out of work this last month due to discouragement, retirement, or otherwise, represented a substantial 579,000-person increase over the most recent record hit in August of 94,031,000 people out of the workforce. Overall, the Labor Department reported that the economy added 142,000 non-farm payroll jobs in September, and the unemployment rate remained at 5.1%. BS. Does anyone actually believe that 5.1 is an accurate number? The real unemployment rate is 29%. 29%. The lies are rolling out of Washington are absolutely astounding. They lie about the jobs market, and they are lying about the state of the economy. We cannot sustain this pace as a nation. The amount of people supporting those who are not working is dramatically changing every day. How much longer do we have? Well, not enough time, I tell you. Not enough time. In other U.S. financial news, Credit Suisse, one of the world's larger investment firms, just confirmed what we all know to be true. We are about to repeat the crash of 2008. And this time, it's going to be much, much worse. During this week's financial wrap-up, Credit Suisse showed that the global risk appetite dropped to panic levels for the first time since January 2012. And that's according to their Global Risk Appetite Index. That is, they're able to track where people want to spend their money at and what their risk level is. And the last time we saw this was back when investor fears the breakup of the Eurobloc grappled with unsustainably high borrowing costs, and they were freaking out about the spillover from Greece. Does that sound familiar? Now, before that, we had the September 2011 attacks, we had the dot-com bubble burst, and we had black market of 1987. These are all big financial events. Now, one of the bigger factors contributing to this, that the U.S. economy may not have even grown 1% in the third quarter, and that's according to the Atlanta Fed's GDP Now tracker. These are some pretty big indicators that things are about to change, and here's my take on these two stories. Right now, we are at a point in history where the business world, it's called the change or die curve. Simply put, you have to need to change your business model so drastically it'll keep you in business or you will die a very quick and rapid death. Neither of these things are good for you and I as preppers. Why? Because if world markets change so rapidly and so differently, it'll certainly impact our pocketbooks and the money in our bank accounts, because it'll either be taken out in the form of bail-ins due to credit defaults or a mass currency collapse because of the devaluation and the creation of a larger, more global currency. Either way we look at it, our economy cannot take change. If you've been feeling like things are about to change rapidly, well, you're right. And there's many, many indicators, like I've reported to you today, that are beginning to show that a devastating change is on the way. If you aren't focusing on getting self-sufficient, well, then you need to kick it, into hyper gear and focus yourself on getting food, energy, and security independent. With global markets in panic position and an unemployment rate of 29%, the signs are all proving it's leading to chaos very soon. Keep focused in the next coming weeks. Well, thanks again for listening, and for Eye on the Economy and Radio Free Readout, this is Fox 519 signing off. God bless.
All right, welcome back from the break. This segment is brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate to help you get relocated to the Panhandle in the northern part of Idaho. SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com, Patriot owned, and they'll get you taken care of. Okay, this was a very tragic thing, of course. This school shooting at the Oregon Community College, the Umpqua Community College. That's a Indian word that means raging river. I'm not making that up. Okay. Obama gets up and he says, well, all kinds of ridiculous things. But let's go ahead and let's get his words. This is part of his speech where he was venting, very emotionally venting, as the left-wing media portrays him. He was basically stammering because... well, he didn't have a teleprompter, but that's got to be a hard job, right? It's got to be tough. Anyway, listen to what he says.
It cannot be this easy for somebody who wants to inflict harm on other people to get his or her hands on a gun.
Okay, first of all, it's not the gun. It's the individual. Now, we've gone over this so many times. Where do I begin? But here's the thing. I'm not going to try to convince a liberal, because you can't. You can't reason with them. It's like reasoning with a drunk. You just stay out of their path, right? But I'll tell you what. What comes to mind for me is, I'm not sure. This is what John Adams says. There is a danger from all men. The only maxim of a free government ought to be to trust no man living with power to endanger the public liberty. Obama is going after liberty. Do you think he cares about people being shot at a university? Because if he truly cared about saving lives, he wouldn't be pushing, and he has pushed for, the funding of an organization that is responsible for murdering millions of babies, the Planned Parenthood. When they said they were going to stop the funding in this new budget bill, he said he would veto it if it had anything in there that would stop the funding of the murdering of babies. And now he's going to act like he cares about saving lives. So I would respond this way, Mr. Obama. It cannot be this easy for someone who wants to undermine the very foundational principles this nation was founded on and its constitution, and destroy the liberties of a free people to obtain public office. It shouldn't be easy, that easy, for someone like you, as reckless and dangerous and an enemy to liberty, to obtain public office. Some common sense measures should be put in place to protect us from people like you, because you're far more dangerous than some little dirtbag with a gun somewhere. You're destroying an entire nation. And it could, here's, let me ask you this also, Obama, like you'll ever listen to this. How about if we say it cannot be this easy for someone to murder their own child because of the inconvenience the baby might bring to its selfish, promiscuous, and irresponsible mother? How many lives are lost and you support it? The only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. All right, let's go ahead and listen on.
And what's become routine, of course, is the response of those who oppose any kind of common sense gun legislation.
See, the thing is that there is no gun legislation that they don't consider to be common sense. Completely taking away your firearms to them is common sense. They want it to be just like overseas, just like in Europe, or just like in England, just like in Australia, which he cites as examples, shining examples that we should be following. But guess what? We're not Australia. We're not British. If we wanted to be British, just like the British, we would be living under British rule, wouldn't have had to throw their chains of tyranny off. Here's something that Edmund Burke said. The people never give up their liberties, but under some delusion. And the delusion here is that giving up guns will make us safer. The delusion is the measures you want to pass are common sense and that it will reduce crime. Edmund Burke also said the true danger is when liberty is nibbled away for expedience and by parts. That's the true danger here. I fear a tyrant wishing to take down Americanism and strip away liberty of the people and to remove their ability to defend themselves, especially from tyranny, than I do some active shooter somewhere. You know why? Because I'm armed wherever I go. And almost all the people that I know are also armed. And if somebody would have been armed in that school, they could have ended it before the police got there. If reducing guns is the answer. I mean, the problem is that there's guns, right? So, and here's the argument also from the liberal left. A person has a firearm and he goes on a shooting rampage. So the argument is if an armed citizen was there, he could have stopped him. The liberal responds with, oh, great, that's all we need is another gun involved. That's their response. I've literally seen these comments. I've seen these comments one after another from liberals saying, oh, great, armed citizens, that's all we need. A situation where there's guns, just bring more guns. Then more people can die. That's how they think. You can't reason with them.
Roughly every man, woman, and child in America. So how can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer? We know that states with the most gun laws tend to have the fewest gun deaths. So the notion that gun laws don't work or just will make it harder for law-abiding citizens and criminals will still get their guns, it's not borne out by the evidence.
You are a liar, straight up. I mean, there's no other way to put it. You're a liar. You know exactly what you're saying. You know exactly what you're doing. It does measure. Let me read you a couple things here. Let's talk about this. You want to talk about statistics? I mean, well, how about your own city, Chicago? That petri dish that produced you. How about what, 40, 50 people a weekend getting shot? 20 deaths, 15, 10, 15, 20 deaths per weekend from the utopia that you came from where guns are banned? A Congressional Research Service, CRS, report shows that while gun ownership climbed from 192 million firearms in 94 to 310 million firearms in 2009, crime fell and fell sharply. According to the report, the firearms-related murder and non-negligent homicide rate was 6.6 per 100,000 Americans in 93. Following the exponential growth in the number of guns, that rate fell to 3.6 per 100,000 in 2000. So, in 7 years, the homicide rate, death, firearm-related murder and non-negligent homicide went from 6.6% to 3.6%. Fell almost by half. That's with an additional, almost 20 million firearms added to our culture. This rate rose from 2004 to 2005 and got as high as 3.9 in 06 and 07. But it then resumed falling in 08. The year the Supreme Court ruled in District of Columbia versus Heller that individual firearm possession is constitutionally protected, particularly for self-defense. This figure fell to 3.2% for every 100,000 citizens by 2011. In other words, as the number of firearms almost doubled over a nearly 20-year period, the firearm-related murder and non-negligent homicide rate was more than halved. Additionally, the overall murder rate dropped from 9 per 100,000 in 94 to 4.7 in 2001. The overall number of estimated murder victims fell from 23,326 to 14,612. Between 94 and 2011. For estimated firearms-related murder victims, those numbers are 16,333 in 94 and 9,903 in 2011. Dropped by, almost 7,000. Daniel Webster said this: God grants liberty only to those who love it and are always ready to guard and defend it. I applaud Idaho Representative Heather Scott and Washington Representative Matt Shea and the sheriff of Bonner County, who wasn't able to attend. He had another engagement, but he prepared a speech to have read for him, standing by this and pushing for constitutional carry. The numbers show the more guns, the less crime. The reason why crime is going up is because of the spiritual sickness in this country. Well, let's listen to what he has to say about crime in other countries. We should be just like them when we... Hi everyone, this is John Jacob Schmidt here to tell you about the 299 Days book series by lawyer and author Glenn Tate. Follow him through his real life story of transitioning from middle-aged, unprepared suburbanite to full-blown prepper, tactical team member, and provider and protector of his family. Go to 299days.com to learn more.
This is Matt Shea with your daily news commentary, the way I see it. As many of you know, I, along with many of my Republican colleagues, introduced a series of state sovereignty bills. They would opt Washington State out of a nationalized healthcare system and also out of a national cap-and-trade program and protect the right to bear arms through the Washington Firearms Freedom Act. The Democrat response? The Speaker pro tem of the House claimed Republicans wanted to, quote, lead Washington out of the Union. Local Senator Chris Maher even inferred to a group of constituents that Republicans are racist. The Spokesman Review said that discussing the constitutional boundaries of the federal government is a waste of time. Really. The problem is, we haven't been talking enough about the Constitution and the basic principles that made this nation great. State sovereignty is in fact about keeping the nation together and fighting Democrat attempts to destroy small business through bigger government. But the bigger point here is that the president and Democrats like Senator Chris Maher have created a cloud of fear that is overshadowing this country. Businesses are afraid to build new factories, buy new equipment, or hire new employees because of the uncertainty surrounding what new regulations, mandates, and taxes are going to come out of Washington, D.C. and Olympia. The people are afraid of proposed assault weapons ban and the rationing of ammunition, or being labeled traitors for believing what the Constitution says or believing that it means what it says. Fear and anxiety are everywhere. State sovereignty, on the other hand, is about hope. If the federal government would just get out of the way and stay in its constitutionally designed box, we would be free to fix our own problems right here in Washington. If we need to fear anything, it's the notion that more socialism is going to solve our economic crisis. Instead, we should look to 2 Chronicles 7:14 for the answer. At least, that's the way I see it. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening.
Hi, I'm Chris Walsh, broker and owner of Revolutionary Realty, based in the heart of America's great redoubt, North Idaho. Every day, I sell homes and land to bankers, doctors, economists, scientists, military folks, and more for good reason. They all know what's coming and want a secure safety and peace for their family. They've done the research and discovered that North Idaho's superior environment, food insecurity, surrounded by more like-minded patriots than anywhere in America. At www.revrealty.us, you can read stories about North Idaho's weather, spring development, growing food, solar, and alternative energy. Additionally, every article has a beautiful quote from the brilliant mind of Thomas Jefferson. We also give you free access to our listings, so feel free to browse our inventory or fill out our short form, and we'll do the searching for you. Call a revolutionary today at 208-667-1776 or visit us online at revrealty.us. That's www.revrealty.us. And God bless you.
All right, we're back with segment three, brought to you by Katie Armor. They have full body armor, front, back, and sides for your tactical needs, and plate carriers. They got all kinds of gear over there. Check them out over at katiearmor.com. That's C-A-T-I. Armor. Don't forget to use your coupon code John Jacob to get your discount. And that's how you email me also, John Jacob at radiofreeredoubt.com. And if you're listening on the go, check us out, radiofreeredoubt.com. It's pretty simple, straightforward. It's got a silent B though, so don't let that throw you off if you're new. Now, let's listen to, I know this is hard. I'm sorry for dragging you through this, but we're going to listen to his voice just one more time. So, this is what he's got to say about why we should do this, because, well, everyone else is doing it.
Friends of ours, allies of ours, Great Britain, Australia, countries like ours. So we know there are ways to prevent it.
Okay, first of all, those are not countries like ours. They are nothing like ours. America is exceptional. The United States is exceptional. Its constitution is exceptional. Our faith is exceptional. We are exceptional. We're not like other countries. There's a reason why people are clamoring to get here, because it is unlike any other nation on earth. Even as destroyed and dismantled as it is and is becoming. Don't compare us to other countries. Well, if you want to compare us to other countries, well, let's take a look. We'll play your game. Let's play their little game. Fact, in America, we can demonstrate that private ownership of guns reduces crimes, but from country to country, there is no correlation between gun availability and the violent crime rate. To use detailed data, we can contrast the per capita homicide rate with the per capita gun ownership rate between the different industrialized countries. And there's a graph here. I'll probably post this. This is from gunfacts.org. Fact, countries with the strictest gun control laws also tended to have the highest homicide rates. That's documented. It's documented right here. Over at the University of Chicago Press Journal of Law and Economics. All this is, there's resources for all of this documentation. Fact, according to the UN, as of 2005, Scotland was the most violent country in the developed world, with people three times more likely to be assaulted than in America. Violent crime there has doubled over the last 20 years. 3% of Scots had been victims of assault compared with 1.2% in America. And in America, it's dropping. Fact, the major surveys completed in the past 20 years or more provides no evidence of any relationship between the total number of legally held firearms in society and the rate of armed crime. Nor is there a relationship between the severity of the controls imposed in various countries or the mass bureaucracy involved with many control systems, with the apparent ease of access to firearms by criminals and terrorists. Fact, even if we examine just firearms ownership and firearm homicide by country, we see no correlation between the two. Fact, Switzerland has relatively lenient gun control for Europe and has the third lowest homicide rate of the top nine major European countries and the same per capita rate as England and Wales. The Swiss basically have a military rifle in every closet. Everybody who has served in the military is allowed to keep their personal weapon even after the end of their military service. Fact, we don't have as many guns in Brazil as in the United States, but we use them more. I'm quoting there. We don't have as many guns in Brazil. Okay. They don't have as many guns in Brazil as the United States. Brazil has mandatory licensing, registration, and maximum personal ownership quotas. It now bans any new sales to private citizens. Their homicide rate is almost three times higher than in the U.S. In Canada, around 1920, before there was any form of gun control, their homicide rate was 7% of the U.S. rate. By 1986, and after significant gun control legislation, Canada's homicide rate was 35% of the U.S.'s rate, a significant increase. In 2003, Canada had a violent crime rate more than double that of the U.S., 963 versus 475 per 100,000 residents. One study of Canadian firearms law and homicide rates spanning 34 years failed to demonstrate a beneficial association between legislation and firearms homicide rates. Well, just like we've seen everywhere else. They don't see the benefits of it playing out in the criminal numbers. Fact, many of the countries with the strictest gun control have the highest rates of violent crime. Australia and England, which have virtually banned gun ownership, have the highest rates of robbery, sexual assault, and assault with force of the top 17 industrialized countries. Fact, the crime rate is 66% higher in four Canadian prairie provinces than in the northern U.S. states across the border. Fact, strict controls over existing arms failed in Finland. Despite needs-based licensing, you know, you got to prove it. You got a need. Why do you need that? If you got a good reason, well, then maybe they'll give you one. So they have needs-based licensing, storage laws, and transportation restrictions. Finland experienced a multiple killing school shooting in 2007. The other myth, Britain has strict gun control and a low crime rate. This is what he's trying to sell us on. The fact is, since gun banning has escalated in the UK, the rate of crime, especially violent crime, has risen. Firearms use in crimes in the UK has doubled in the decade since handguns were banned. Britain has the highest rate of violent crime in Europe, more so than in the United States or even South Africa. They also have the second highest overall crime rate in the European Union. In 2008, Britain had a violent crime rate nearly five times higher than that of the United States. The numbers per capita, 2034 versus 446 per 100,000 citizens. 67% of British residents surveyed believe that as a result of gun and knife crime rising, the area they're quoted, the area I live in is not as safe as it was 5 years ago. Street robberies soared 28% in 2001. Violent crime was up 11%. Murder, 4%. Rape, 14%. This trend continued in the UK in 2004 with a 10% increase in street crimes, 8% increase in muggings, 22% increase in robberies. Listen to this. In 1919, almost 100 years ago, before the UK had any gun control, it had a homicide rate that was 8% of the US. By 1986, and after enacting significant gun control, the rate was 9% of the US rate, practically unchanged. So for 80 years, their murder rate stayed the same, with no gun control laws in place at all. There's nothing in the statistics for England and Wales to suggest that either the stricter controls on handguns prior to 97 or the ban imposed since have controlled access to such firearms by any criminals. The criminals are still getting their hands on the guns. In fact, the gun crime has doubled. All their crimes are going up. Now, British offenses in 2000. In 2000, they're comparing the crime statistics from the year 2000. How much has it increased? What's the percentage of increase in these crimes since before the ban on private firearms ownership? Armed robbery, up 170.1%. Kidnapping and abduction, up 144%. Assault, 130.9%. Attempted murder, 117.6%. Sexual assault, 112.6%. That's the increase in those crimes from since before they had the firearms ban for private owner gun ownership to 2000. That's a massive jump. Well, that's just British. I mean, you know, Australia, they did it. We could look at Australia too. It's the same thing. I've got the numbers here from Australia. Where is it? Before the Australian firearm ban, matching a global downward trend. Oh, homicides were falling before the Australian firearm ban, matching a global downward trend in most industrialized countries. However, non-firearm homicides are relatively stable in Australia. Fact, crime has been rising since enacting a sweeping ban on private gun ownership. In the first 2 years after the Australian gun owners were forced to surrender all their firearms, over 500,000, government statistics showed a dramatic increase in criminal activity. In 2001 to 2002, homicides were up by another 20%. From the inception of the firearms confiscation to March of 2000, the numbers are: firearm-related murders up 19%, armed robbery up 69%, home invasions up 21%. And the sad part is that in the 15 years before the national gun confiscation in Australia, firearm-related homicides dropped nearly 66%. Firearm-related deaths fell 50%. That's before they banned citizens from owning firearms. Gun crimes have been rising throughout Australia since guns were banned. In Sydney alone, robbery rates with guns rose 160% in 2001, more than the previous year. A 10-year Australian study has concluded that firearms confiscation had no effect on crime rates. A separate report also concluded Australia's 96 gun control laws found evidence for an impact of the laws on the pre-existing decline in firearm homicides. And yet another report from Australia for a similar time period indicates the same lack of decline in firearm homicides. Oh, what about Japan? In Japan, the total murder rate is almost 1 per 100,000. In the U.S., there are about 3.2 murders per 100,000 people each year by weapons other than firearms. This means that even if firearms in the U.S. could be eliminated, the U.S. would still have three times the murder rate of the Japanese if they took away all of the guns. We have a violent, sick society that's at war against God, and it's going to destroy ourselves. We're going to destroy ourselves from within. It's been foretold, but we don't listen, do we? Anyway, guys, there's more here, but I want to leave you with this. When pundits try to tell you that you'll be safer with less guns, ask them, when there's an active shooter, why would you call the police? They're just going to show up with guns, more guns. Yeah, but they're highly trained. They're trained. Yeah, they're trained to get there in 20 minutes or even 10. How many people can be killed in 10 minutes? 5 minutes. And they had an unarmed security guard. Unarmed security guard. So when a bad guy is going on a rampage murdering people, who do they call? People with guns. Because that's the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun. And we went over these statistics, what, 2 weeks ago? The number of lives saved when a civilian intervenes versus when police intervene. It's like 10 more lives on average are saved when it's a civilian who intervenes with a shooter. Active shooter situations. Isn't that something? And they're talking about the police being the trained professionals. I just read another study here. I didn't pull it into my notes about the accidental discharges and unintentional. How did they word it? Shooting the person you didn't mean to shoot in a gun battle. Somebody else gets shot by the police other than the perpetrator. The high numbers and the accidental discharges by trained professionals. And I would also argue that the civilian populace here, I know people, they go to the range, they practice, they train. They're as trained, if not better trained, than your average police officer. I guarantee it. Guarantee it. Because that's part of their lifestyle. It's not their job. I mean, with the it's changing, fortunately, with the work of people like, you know, Colonel Dave Grossman and people like that. They're changing that, developing that more of that warrior mindset, preparing them for combat, you know, on the streets. Because there's bad guys out there, and they're getting increasingly violent, hostile, and aggressive. Our police officers have to be able to respond to that bad guy. But by and large, I would say the civilian who's going to carry regularly, he's into it. He's responsible. He's trained. And probably as trained, if not better trained, than the police officers who are going to show up at a shooting, at an active shooter situation. I know because I see this training going on regularly. And many of them are not police officers. So anyway, train, carry everywhere you go. Be prepared to save lives. And it happens without warning. So have good situational awareness. We're living in a brave new world. They created it. They got it. We have to deal with it. So anyway, that's all, guys. I'm going to wrap up here. It's not everything that I wanted to cover tonight. But in the time that I had with everything that was going on, I at least wanted to get something out to you guys. So thank you. And thank you for your patience. And thank you, guys. God bless you for being out there and for your support and for your prayers, for your financial support, helping us stay on the air, helping us grow, helping us go. And we really need some help on the ACN network. And also people keep asking, can we please add the other half hour? They made a way for us to do it. It's just a matter of funding. So I'm a poor patriot. So, I mean, it's really going to be up to you. And it really shouldn't be up to most of you. It should be up to the listeners on ACN. If they're out there in Central Washington, they want to hear it on the AM or FM stations, they could step up, darn it. But anyway, all your help is just so appreciated. You guys have a blessed week. And we're going to work on comms. And I'm not going to be doing a partisan radio episode tonight. That will be tomorrow night. So hold your horses. I'm working on it. All right. We got some cool stuff going on. Some good training going on with Amron Corps. And we're kind of excited about that. And I've got to continue familiarizing myself with my KX3 Elecraft. That is so amazing. That's an amazing little radio. It was a gift. I couldn't believe it. Stunned. I couldn't believe it. I was just so blessed. You guys are so awesome. Anyway, I got to go. You have a blessed week, and we'll talk soon. We'll see you on the air next Saturday on KTW and ACN, and the next Sunday night right here at the Voice of the American Redoubt. Good night.